नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Canto 4, Chapter 29, Texts 30 and 31, and this is 31. Tata kamashayo jiva uchavacha patha brahman upparyadho vamadeva yati dishtam priya priyam. This verse is filled with contradictions. So, both 30 and 31, translation. The living entity is exactly like a dog. That's what it says. Sara meyaha. It's not in 31, but it's in 30. Who, overcome with hunger, goes from door to door for some food? According to his destiny, he sometimes receives a punishment and is driven out. And at other times, he receives a little food to eat. Similarly, the living entity, being influenced by so many desires, similarly, the living entity, being influenced by so many desires, wanders in different species of life according to destiny. Sometimes he is high, and sometimes he is low. Sometimes he goes to the heavenly planets, sometimes to hell, sometimes to the middle planets, and so on. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The living entity's position is herein likened to a dog's. By chance, a dog may have a very rich owner, and by chance he may become a street dog. As the dog of a rich man, he will live very opulently. Sometimes, in Western countries, we hear that a master leaves millions of dollars to a dog in his will. And it's true. I don't know how they get the dog to sign the document that says, I've received my... I guess they have somebody being the trustee of the trust, and then that person signs on behalf of the dog. The dog just wags his tail and it's woof, woof. And of course, there are many dogs loitering in the street without food. Therefore, to liken the conditioned existence of the living entity to that of a dog is very appropriate. An intelligent human being, however, can understand that if he has to live the life of a dog, he had best become Krishna's dog. In the material world, a dog is sometimes elevated and sometimes on the street. But in the spiritual world, Krishna's dog is perpetually, eternally happy. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has therefore sung, Vaishnav Thakur Tomar Kukura Bhalya Jana Mori. In this way, Bhaktivinoda Thakur offers to become a Vaishnav's dog. A dog always keeps himself at his master's door and does not allow any person unfavorable to the master to enter. Similarly, one should engage in the service of a Vaishnav and try to please him in every respect. Unless one does so, he does not make spiritual advancement. apart from spiritual advancement in the material world, if one does not develop his qualities of goodness, he cannot be promoted to the higher planetary system, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 14:18. Urdvam gacchanti sattvasta madhye tishtanti rajasa jaghanya guna vrittista adho gacchanti tamasa. Those situated in the mode of goodness gradually go upward to the heavenly planets. Those in the mode of passion live in Hyderabad. Live on the earthly planets. And those in the mode of ignorance go down to the hellish worlds. Last paragraph. There are many varieties of life in the different planetary systems, and these come about due to the living entities developing his qualities in goodness, passion, and ignorance. If one is in goodness, he is promoted to the higher systems. If in passion, he remains in the middle systems. And in ignorance, he is pushed down to the lower species of life. Tata kamashayo jiva ucha vachapata brahman uparyado va madyeva yati dishtam priya priyam. Narada is continuing to educate King Prachini Bari about the circumstance of karma. A simple principle. That is presented in Bhagavad Gita and expanded upon in the Srimad Bhagavatam. That's the relationship between Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada has explained that it's like the graduate study. So, undergraduate study is Bhagavad Gita. And the graduate study is Srimad Bhagavatam. And then there's postgraduate study. That's Chaitanya Charitamrita. Because the principles that one learns in undergraduate is not a different principle in graduate. It's just more precisely or very detailed and delicately applied, a principle that's applied in a more refined and subtle manner. So the understandings that are essential are found in Bhagavad Gita and then expanded upon in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So the principle that's the Bhagavad Gita principle is mentioned. Urdvam gacchanti sattvasta. Urdvam, just like the tilak that we wear. It's not this kind, it's this kind. It's urdvam. Vertical tilak. So there are different varieties according to the sampradaya of vertical tilak, but it means worship of Lord Vishnu. Urdvam gacchanti sattvasta. Those who are situated similarly in the quality of sattva. What's the meaning of sattva? Oh, scholars over here. I'm looking at these young boys here. Sattva? Sattva? There's three modes of nature. What's the higher of the three modes of nature? Goodness. Sattva is the word for goodness. And then the middle one? What's the lower one? Ignorance. Tama. So we have sattva and we have tama. What's in the middle? Passion. Yeah. He knows that one. And that's rajas. Just like a king is raja. Right? Maharaj Yudhisthira or Maharaj Ambarish. A king is the raja. They're warriors. They're passion. And they rule in that way. So the mode of passion is in the middle, rajas. The upper one is sattva, goodness, and then ignorance at the bottom, tama. And according to the modes of nature with which we associate, we get a body and a destination, a place where the body lives. So the atmosphere in tamas and in ignorance is darkness and where consciousness is very covered. One of the reasons given why the living entity, when descending to a lower form of life, does not remember their former higher form of life is because the condition in the lower forms of life, they're so painful, there's so much suffering, that they couldn't possibly carry the same higher consciousness in the lower form of body. It's too painful. So their consciousness becomes covered, or that bodily form is the external exhibition of that covered state of consciousness, so that they can endure the pain. Like, this is the Damodar month, when Nala Kuvera and Manigriva were cursed to stand as trees. Prabhupada would speak like this. Imagine if half of your body, your whole life, was buried under the earth. Whatever insects, water, all types of things happening in the lower half of your body. But you can't move. You can't even itch, you know, just stand there. And the other half of your body is standing with your arms up in the air. You can't say anything. You can't do anything. And for hundreds of years. And here comes the rain. Here comes the wind. Here comes the cold. Here comes the scorching heat. Here comes an insect crawling on you. Here comes a bird pecking at you, a woodpecker. And you just stand there. Somebody breaks off a limb. Just stand there. We wouldn't be able to bear it. So consciousness has to be more covered for that life form. Just to endure the hardship of that particular form of life. So consciousness becomes covered and the body is also very dull. But still conscious. Consciousness is still present. Studies have been done to show how plants respond to how they're treated. Two studies that I'm aware of. One is about music. Some woman, a horticulturist, they take care of plants. So they had a greenhouse. Three greenhouses, and in one greenhouse, they played classical music. You know, Mozart, Beethoven, Bach, that kind of classical music, Western version, classical music. And the middle was like popular music, bebop, a-da-boop, 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 a-da-boop. music. And then the other one was do you watch television? The other one was heavy, whatever they call it, heavy metal or hard rock or something like that. And then they just like grew the same plants in those three different greenhouses, hearing the different sound vibrations. And the ones in the greenhouse with the mode of goodness sound vibration, they flourish. And then, you know, diminished and very diminished. And then they took the diminished plants and put them in the mode of goodness music place, and they started to flourish. Then another one was they had persons taking care of, this is another place, another part of the world, people that were taking care of the plants that were very kind. They would speak nicely to the plant and treat them, you know, with kindness and dignity and gentle demeanor. And then there was another group that came in and yelled at them and slapped them and, you know, real vicious treatment. And then they hooked the plants up to some kind of electrode that would measure the flow of fluids through the plants. And they had, like, they were traumatized when the mean people just walked in the room. And then the people that were very nice and gentle, they flourished. As some indication, I mean, it's not a proof, but some indication that plants are conscious. And they respond to what, you know, what to speak of plants respond, what to speak of people. Respond to how they're treated, or the mode of nature with which they're in contact. So a plant really doesn't, it's passive, it really can't get up and, you know, leave me alone, I'm getting out of here. They can't do that. They're stuck. And to receive that particular form of life, that's a consequence of some sinful activity, a very serious kind of sinful activity at some point in the human form of life. Because the lower forms of life, there is a evolution of consciousness from the lower forms to the next stage. So from the duration of life as a plant, they may, the next life, become an insect or something higher on the evolutionary scale. Because their bad karma is being extinguished, burned, by that deprivation, their sentence to be in this plant body. And then when that sentence is completed, then they're elevated in consciousness to the next level and a corresponding body, next level, corresponding body, next level, corresponding body. Up to the human form of life. And when the human form of life is reached, there's higher consciousness in the evolutionary scale, and with that higher consciousness comes opportunity. With that facility comes opportunity. That opportunity, they can make more choices. There's greater freedom. And that greater freedom, then in the human form of life, one can choose. What mode of nature do I choose to associate with? We're not obliged, if we're in the passionate mode, to stay in the passionate mode. One can go to a higher mode, one can stay there, one can go to a lower mode. And depending upon the choices of free will in the human form of life, one can go very far down. And that's what's being described here. This Brahman, it means wandering. Like Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jeev, that's the word. So the living entity is wandering through various species of life. It's not B-R-A-H-M-A-N. It's B-H-R-A-M-A-N. Wandering. The living entity is wandering. And the living entity is wandering based upon multiple things, based upon choices from the human form of life. And then once in the lower form of life, they're wandering based upon the laws of nature that force them. Of course, there's some amount of training that can happen, like Prabhupada is explaining here. A faithful dog sits at the family's door and keeps people away. Woof, woof. Stay away. Right? And some dogs are more peaceful. But some dogs are, you know, really territorial. And try to train a territorial dog to not bark. You know, people try and they just... doesn't work. They just have their nature. And same, Prabhupada is saying here that sometimes by chance, now we don't normally hear Prabhupada saying by chance one dog is born, or excuse me, is kept by a very wealthy person, so they have all facility. And another dog has no master. He's a street dog, and then he has to go, you know, rummaging for food wherever he can get it, and sometimes gets slapped and punished and chased away, and sometimes gets something. The living entity is compared, so it's not by chance that we're in different circumstances of life. It's by our past guna and karma. Whether we'll be a nice poodle dog, manicured very nicely by some wealthy owner, or we'll be some other kind of dog, born in the street and live in the street and die in the street, with no master and no fixed place. And same in the human form of life. There's different situations. And whatever the situation is today, or the present frame of time, it will change by external circumstances. But the point is, of the verse, is the external circumstances change by our guna and karma. That was mentioned just yesterday. So, it's a very flickering or insecure situation. Whatever the circumstance is in this world, whatever we may find oneself. So the implication to King Prachini Bari is don't waste your time in this program of trying to elevate yourself by karmakanda rituals and prosper as a very wealthy king in this life, and because of your pious deeds, go to the heavenly realm and hang out there for a while, and then chinye marchalokam prashanti. Marchalokam prashanti. One again falls down to this human, to this earthly plane, and continues the wandering and wandering and wandering. So, as is happening here, because Prachini Bari is meeting Narada, it's the same as what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is describing in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Brahmanda Ramite Kona Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadi Vai Bhakti Lata Bij. That wandering living entity by good fortune may receive the mercy of both Krishna and spiritual master, and by that mercy received, the seed of devotion unto Krishna becomes awakened. And by that, the whole process of birth and death can end. Minimally, Narada wants King Prajinibari to become a devotee. His ancestors were perfected devotees. And he's an elevated person also, but tainted by fruitive attraction. He wants to bring him to the shelter of devotional service once again. But part of the necessity of bringing someone to devotional service is their strong attachment to fruitive activities has to be broken. Commonly that's broken by, in spiritual life, by transcendental knowledge. By hearing, one gains transcendental knowledge, and that specifically the transcendental knowledge of the Bhagavatam, we quoted this verse earlier, but chintanti kovidas tasya. It's like a sharpened sword, so sharp that it just cuts the knot of false ego. Can anybody here cut the knot of false ego? Have you tried? It's pretty elusive, isn't it? But the Bhagavatam is so powerful and so potent that hearing regularly the sound vibration of Srimad Bhagavatam can accomplish that. And all these other things, this diminishing of rajas, tamas, tato bhava, kama lobha dayasya echeta, etair anad vidham, stitvam sattve prasidati. Sattve means, again, we heard it earlier, sattve, goodness, very good. You are paying attention. So goodness becomes more prominent just by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Isn't it nice to be in the mode of goodness? Wait till after class. Okay. And ignorance and passion subside without some separate endeavor. It just happens because the sound vibration coming from Vyasadeva and glorifying the personality of Godhead, Krishna, and the process of devotional service to connect with him, it brings us to that position. It's gradual, but it doesn't have to be gradual. It's gradual because we're attached. We've been discussing this. We're holding on to our dirt, to our contamination, our mode of ignorance and passion program, our little God project in the material world. God project because we're trying to be God. We're trying to be the enjoyer of some little corner of God's creation and pretend that God isn't the predominating person. So that tendency subsides just by the hearing process, and overall, beginning with the hearing process, the process of devotional service, carrying out our activities according to what we've heard, applying the things that we've heard, the mode of goodness. He's trying. So from that unfortunate position of being likened to a dog, then let us become, if we have to be a dog, let us be Krishna's dog. This Prabhupada quotes Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Sharanagati songs. He says, if offered the post of Brahma, the topmost being in the whole of the cosmic creation, but if you say you can be Brahma, but you can't engage in devotional service, he writes in the song, no thank you, I'll decline that option. But if you offer me the option of becoming a dog, but I can live in the home of a Vaishnav and take the remnants of the food of a Vaishnav and hear the topics of Krishna in the presence of a Vaishnav and serve the Vaishnav, then I'll say yes to that one. Let me be the dog of a Vaishnava, the dog of Krishna. Let me be in association of devotees and try to favorably serve them. This is the merit, not the heavenly or higher than heavenly. Brahmaloka, Satyaloka. Let me be a Vaishnav. And in the association of Vaishnavas, hearing, remembering, serving, worshipping, praying, in relation to Krishna. We have this wonderful description in Chaitanya Charitamrita where because of the association of Shivananda Sen, one street dog went back to Godhead in just a matter of a few months. You know the story? Here's the story. Shivananda Sen was a very advanced Vaishnav and devotee of Lord Chaitanya. And amongst all the Vaishnavas, he had this title, Sena, means he's like an aristocratic landholder, like a king. In Mayapur, before Chandkazi became the ruler in Navadvip, there was a long dynasty of Sena family. They were Vaishnava kings. So it's a title indicating like a kingly order, a Kshatriya order. So Shivananda Sena, he took the responsibility when all the devotees from Bengal went every year to attend the Jagannath Rath Yatra. He took care of everything. He took care of their meals. He took care of their accommodations. He took care of boat crossings. He took care of the government agents, the military people, the dacoits. He took care of everything. It was like, you know, the king of the group. So one year when they were traveling from West Bengal, to Puri, as they were traveling, one street dog started following them. Maybe we've had this experience when we go on yatra. Sometimes dogs just follow the devotees. So he took compassion upon the dog, and he ordered that along with making sure that everyone had their meals, make sure that the dog has his meal. So one day, when they were setting up for the evening, he asked the persons that were in charge of feeding everybody, were you able to feed the dog? They said, we can't find the dog. So we'll send 10 men in all directions to find the dog. They couldn't find the dog anywhere. He was in great anxiety. What happened to the dog? After some time, they reached Jagannath Puri. And when Shivananda Sen saw to everyone's accommodation, he went to the place where Lord Chaitanya was, Gambira, and he saw the dog sitting in front of Lord Chaitanya. And you know what the dog was doing? Krishna! And Lord Chaitanya had coconut pulp, and he was throwing him coconut pulp, and he'd catch the coconut pulp and chew the coconut pulp. And Lord Chaitanya would then say again, chant, Krishna! And throw him some more coconut pulp. Shivananda Sen prostrated himself, dandabas, in front of the dog. You're so fortunate. You're receiving direct remnants of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and you're calling Krishna's holy name by the power of Lord Chaitanya. And it became known that the dog received the mercy of Lord Chaitanya because he had received the mercy of Shivananda Sen, the Lord's devotee. And some days later, the dog again disappeared, and it became commonly known that the dog had gone to Vaikuntha after having been liberated by Lord Chaitanya. So if you have to be a dog, be the dog of a devotee or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the company of devotees, you get the mercy of the devotees, you get the mercy of Krishna. You may not, in your within weeks, go back to Godhead. That was pretty special, receiving the special mercy of Lord Chaitanya. But what's being presented in the purport here is we're in this difficult circumstance within the material body, within the material world, and caught up in the complexities of material existence. Become Krishna's devotee. Become Krishna's dog. Be fully dependent upon Krishna's mercy, whatever your circumstance. And in this way, make your life perfect. We'll end there and see if there's some question or comment.
Yeah. Today is a Prabhupada Disappearance Day. I just want to make remembrance of Srila Prabhupada. One class, Prabhupada was telling Krishna consciousness is very important for human being. Otherwise, next life, no chance. And if you are not serious, next life, you may become dog.
Uh-oh.
So, in the...
Better get serious then.
So, in assembly, one American, he stand up and he said...
What's wrong with being a dog? Right?
Yes. S.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, I don't like to become a dog. And then Prabhupada said, okay, you can have my blessing. What happened that person, he become dog or he become devotee?
That person became a devotee. During the time that Prabhupada was speaking, you know, the early days of the movement, sometimes the audience was hippies and they were living like animals. And Prabhupada would speak very directly about, you know, animal life. Don't live like animals, having sex on the street and, you know, so on and so on and so on. And, you know, and people would say, what's wrong? You become an animal. What's wrong with being an animal? I think I'd like to be an animal. There was a survey done in Italy to find if people believed in reincarnation. And it was a large number of people in Italy that believed in reincarnation, some 80% or something like that. Although it's largely a Catholic country and it's not part of their doctrine, people still believed in reincarnation. So when they asked them, what would you like to be in your next life if you believe in reincarnation? The men predominantly said they wanted to be a horse. You want to know what the women said? They said they wanted to be a snake. That's in Italy. It's not in India. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much, Maharaj. I remember that pastime of Prabhupada.
Okay, we have a couple more questions here. In connection to the Ugra Karma discussed yesterday and day before, at times the occupational duty takes a lot of consciousness and energy. In these situations, how to work with detachment? From the Bhagavad Gita discussion yesterday, the answer is you work with attachment for Krishna. And when you work with attachment for Krishna, therein you'll find detachment. Just like I mentioned yesterday morning here, in a big city, it's abundant ugra karma. So how can you be detached when all around you is the mode of passion and ugra karma in a big city? We're all in a big city. And the answer is that you live your life for Krishna. Engage in preaching work. Some type of extending the message of Krishna, the mercy of Krishna, unto others. Try to do like that. Make plans and directly engage in those activities. Our temples are for that purpose, to provide people the chance to come and associate with devotees and hear the message of Krishna. So participate like that, and then take the message and give it to others. Some form, some fashion, in some way. Or distribute prasadam, or distribute books, or distribute the holy name, or distribute just the spoken message. Somehow. And by doing so, there's detachment in the workplace and in the city and all around town. Take shelter of the internal potency, and the external potency isn't acting upon you in the same way. Even you're in the midst of it. Wow, here's a long one. Your message that we must endeavor with sincerity and devotion and beg for mercy has given me a lot of strength. Question. I'm understanding through the process of hearing that the sustaining and driving force in Krishna consciousness is higher taste for relationship with the spiritual masters and authorities who are guiding us in Krishna consciousness. Kindly give me your blessings, if you so desire, so that I can overcome fruitive mentality and develop a higher taste. So whoever wrote this, may that desire be fulfilled. We must not blame the instrument of our karma. I mentioned that earlier, yesterday. Then, is it okay to blame ourselves? As there is such a strong tendency to blame someone. Yes, we should take responsibility. Not exactly blame, but take responsibility. I see it, thanks. Wonderful scriptural example of this is Lord Brahma coming in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto. This was the last chapter that Srila Prabhupada translated in the sequence of Srimad Bhagavatam. And the 14th chapter comes right after the 13th chapter. And the 13th chapter is Lord Brahma stealing the calves and the cowherd boys. And the 14th chapter is his uh-oh realization after doing that. And in his prayer, he realizes, I've done a bad, very bad thing. And I'm going to get a reaction for that bad thing. And when the reaction comes, I accept responsibility. Specifically, I'm not going to invest consciousness in trying to minimize the reaction. Let it come. Because largely, we, you know, really fortify ourselves and try to, like, you know, stop reactions from coming. Reduce it or adjust it or somehow, like, you know, make a plan so it's not going to hurt so much. Lord Brahma is not doing that. Let the reaction that I'm due come. Instead of investing consciousness in that, let me place my consciousness at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and let my mind not budge one inch from that place while these reactions are coming. And fully confident that by doing so, I'll inherit the property of my father. Now, who is Lord Brahma's father? Garbhadakshay Vishnu. And what's the property of Garbhadakshay Vishnu? The spiritual world. You inherit the spiritual world. You become a resident of the spiritual world just by remembering the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. The reference is by law of progenitor. If the son outlives the father, the son inherits the property of the father. Still existent in India today? So, by remembrance of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I inherit the property of my father, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's not like I'll own Vaikuntha. But I'll become a resident in Vaikuntha just by that one thing. Looking at the clock, and I'll just take this one question. This isn't full sentences. Having desire to follow a particular instruction, with me it happens that other devotional areas apparently get neglected. Even I am unable to follow the instructions as the mind becomes restless and keeps jumping from one to another. How to set priorities in life based on instructions? Well, go to your instructor and ask for some help to set your priorities. And then follow them. Knowing that, you know, my mind is restless and it's hard to stay fixed on what those priorities are, but receive them and apply yourself and continue each day to apply yourself and apply yourself and apply yourself. And gradually it becomes established. It's a cultivation. Prabhupada describes this in the introduction of Nectar Devotion, that devotional service is a kind of cultivation, right? And that word, cultivation, is his translation of anushilana. You know that verse? Anyabhilasha to shunyam, jnana karma janavratam, anukulyena krishna, anushilana, bhakti uttama. It's the verse that describes the message of the whole of Nectar Devotion. So anushilana means, literally means anu, it means follow, and shilana means behavior or conduct. So you follow the example of the perfected souls, or you follow the instructions that you receive, or you cultivate Krishna consciousness. Because right away you're not right at the top, you're somewhere in between where you are and, you know, where you want to be. So you cultivate towards that objective. That's sadhana, you practice. Remember the verse the other evening, abhyasa yoga yuktena, chetasa nanya gamino. Towards that end, you cultivate, you endeavor. And if you, at first you don't succeed, what's the phrase? Try and try again. You've heard that one? You have that expression here? If at first you don't succeed, try and try again. It's like a little child nursery rhyme. But it applies in devotional service. So don't become frustrated that, you know, I've been chanting for some time now and I'm not a pure devotee yet. You continue to practice and apply yourself. Don't be lazy. Continue to apply yourself to the process. And it's effective. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.